Good morning. Small group, but shiny faces. I am Sharon Barfield, just like it says here on the slide. I'm here with my esteemed colleague, Andy Ward, and we are from the Kansas Health Institute in Topeka, Kansas. I'm here to present findings from the Underinsured in Kansas project. Can you guys hear me? Okay. And you may, as you can surmise from the title, Voices of Underinsured Kansans, I'm going to present qualitative findings. We have no relationships to disclose. Here's an overview of what I'm going to be talking about that I'll just let you look at for a moment. As you know, policy discussion and federal health reform have focused on expanding health insurance coverage, but far less focus has been placed on the adequacy of that coverage. How many of you know what underinsurance is? I know two people in the room do, but they're not raising their hands, okay. The underinsured population consists of those individuals with health insurance, but whose insurance does not adequately cover their health care needs, a situation that often results in financial strain, medical debt, or postponing needed care, all things that you will see our participants experienced. The purpose of the qualitative component of the Underinsured in Kansas project was to gain a better understanding of the experience of being underinsured, which is pretty common with a qualitative research. So not surprisingly, we conducted face-to-face interviews with 10 underinsured Kansans. Participants represented different parts of the state, but the sample is not representative. We went to Western Kansas, talked to a farm family, Southeast Kansas, talked to a retired football coach, but of course the sample is not representative. I used grounded theory to identify emergent themes that I'll talk about here in a bit. Pretend like right now you're looking at a slide that says findings. I failed to include that in the slide deck. 8 of the 10 persons that we talked with didn't realize their health insurance was inadequate until they had trouble paying medical bills or were denied coverage. Some said at that point their insurance and the sense of security it had afforded them seemed to disappear. One woman had the same coverage for 30 years and she just hadn't used it. And when she got sick, she said it seemed to vanish. 8 of 10 persons interviewed didn't realize their health insurance was inadequate until they had trouble paying medical bills or were denied coverage. I apologize, this went the wrong direction. 4 people considered their plans inadequate for different reasons. One didn't cover a prosthesis, one stopped paying for care. One policy excluded treatment for a pre-existing condition. I pay a monthly premium for nothing, really, because I still have to pay for all my insulin and doctor's visit, Bob said. I can't live without my insulin. I would literally die without it. 6 of the 10 Kansans interviewed described their coverage in variations of good, really good, very good, and they thought it would adequately cover their health care expenses, but the reality turned out to be very different. And even after realizing they were underinsured, participants still described their plans as good, which is curious. How can that be? People's insurance failed to protect them from financial strains when their incomes were low to moderate or their health care needs were high. For example, Leonard and Jan had low health care needs, but their policy was inadequate relative to their income. The couple was retired and living on a fixed income, and they struggled with even small increases in their cost-sharing requirements. Some patients' coverage was inadequate relative to their health care needs. For example, Carol described her coverage as really good, but her share of expenses for treating her multiple chronic conditions was more than she could afford. It's really good coverage. It's just that I have many conditions, and when you go to the doctor constantly, it really adds up. There were multiple consequences of underinsurance that I'll be talking about. The first was lack of access. When their insurance plans didn't cover medical services, some participants couldn't access care, which disrupted their daily lives. I really wish insurance companies understood that while they're dealing with the bottom line, we're dealing with daily life. I have an 18-month-old, and I have to carry him around. I have to cook and clean and work on the farm. When I'm in so much pain that I can't get out of bed, that makes life tough. Most of the participants experience financial strain. These are the sub-themes that I'll be talking about. Tracy thought her family's coverage was adequate, so she was surprised by the amounts her family became responsible for paying out of pocket. We felt comfortable taking care of my husband's health care needs because we thought we were covered. Then we realized that what you think is not such a big deal adds up quickly. It becomes astronomical. Individuals did not know how much their health care would cost before receiving it, which I think is pretty common. As this quote illustrates, when they said you need bypass surgery today, you don't stop and ask how much is it. You just say, fix me. Interviewees said they had trouble paying bills and balancing healthcare costs with daily living expenses, as Marie explained. You're juggling between, okay, are we going to pay our mortgage this month, or are we going to buy medicine? You're pitted between those things, and that's a hard place to be because a person's health is priceless. And she was referring to her husband's health. Her husband has muscular dystrophy. Karen withdrew $30,000 from retirement savings to pay for an uncovered prosthesis. While I waited, my leg atrophied and I was absolutely exhausted. Finally, when I realized my health was in the balance, to protect my mental and physical well-being, I bought the prosthesis myself. To pay their share of healthcare expenses, people tightened their budgets. Four families had trouble purchasing healthy food, which of course we need to stay healthy. We want to get the right kind of food. You can buy cheap pastas and things, but it's not good for you. It certainly isn't good for someone with type 1 diabetes because pastas are full of carbohydrates. The healthiest food is expensive. And Bob went on to talk about how he had tried to save expenses and eat pasta, and he was up sick all night checking his blood sugar and taking insulin, so obviously it didn't save him anything. Financial strain manifested itself in medical debt for a half of the underinsured Kansas families. My husband went to doctor after doctor that ran test after test after test, and by the time we got all the bills paid, we realized there was no way we could pay the premium and the deductibles and the coinsurance. We were absolutely overwhelmed with medical debt, Tracy said. Families did what they could to pay their medical debt. They made payment plans, sought financial counseling, tried bill consolidation, took second jobs, used retirement savings, two returned to work after retirement. But healthcare providers eventually turned bills that participants couldn't pay over for collections, which of course caused them a lot of stress. At that point, the bills kept coming in, and so did the phone calls from collectors. One individual recalled this as a miserable time. 5 of 10 persons said collections had ruined their credit rating, dampening their hopes for the future. For one couple, this meant delaying their dreams to take over the family farm. We farm with my husband's parents, who want to retire, but they can't until we're financially stable. So they have to keep working until we get this medical debt paid and the bank will fund us to farm. Our credit is ruined, absolutely ruined. It will take us 10 to 15 years to rebuild. The parents had to continue farming, and as you can imagine, this caused strain in the family as well. Despite their efforts to pay what they owed, 4 of 10 families eventually filed for bankruptcy because of medical debt. Participants who had incurred medical debt had to balance costs with what was best for their health. Some didn't fill prescriptions, some made decisions about what prescriptions they could fill. Those interviewed, like Sam, described deferring needed care. We've had to triage my care just to focus on those things that are most immediately dangerous and more long-term, trying not to treat my cardiovascular system because I see that as less as an immediate threat than his diabetes. There's a lot of heart disease in my family, so that worries me. People faced other challenges that I'm going to be talking about. All participants faced psychological challenges. Paramount among them were worry and stress. People wanted to pay their health care bills and worried about doing so. If you have a conscience, you want to pay your bills. I've always paid my bills, and when you can't pay them, it causes you a tremendous amount of worry, John said. The word stress appeared multiple times in all transcripts, which worsens people's health. The stress is just so awful in the entire body, your immune system, your psychology, the way your brain works, your heart, it worsens everything, Sam said. In addition to stress, participants experienced depression. At the worst, I got to the point where I didn't do anything but lay on the floor in a fetal position. It's mind-boggling what depression and stress does, John said. As finances have been in a death spiral, I have grown more and more depressed. At times, I despair that I have no future. Stress and depression led to physical problems like weight gain. People said that to cope with stress, they overate and gained weight. My husband didn't eat, and I ate myself into oblivion. That's how we deal with stress. A financial strain resulted in other physical challenges, including sleeplessness. Marie remembered how racing thoughts about bankruptcy kept her awake at night. You lay there all night long thinking, what am I going to do? How am I going to do it? Are we going to file bankruptcy? I never thought I'd be filing bankruptcy. I can't believe we're filing bankruptcy. How is this going to affect our future? Does it mean we're never going to have anything? Participants also discussed work challenges, like taking extra jobs, being called at work by bill collectors. And they described how financial strain took a toll on family relationships. We have a great relationship, but it seems like money is the one thing that can strain it to the core. You take the first 2 years of marriage, which are supposed to be so happy, and add in all that stress, it made our lives, to be quite frank, a living hell. The people we talked through had gone through a lot, very difficult times that one described as a living hell. Yet 8 of the 10 participants didn't express anger, which surprised me. I went in expecting to see a lot of anger, and instead I saw a lot of fear, something I didn't have time to talk about today. Instead, people seemed to maintain reasonable attitudes, as illustrated by Sam's words. There are a lot of good people on both the provider side and the insurance side. It's just that we've got a god-awful dysfunctional system that's chewing up lots and lots of people, including me. Some provisions of health reform will lessen some of the challenges associated with underinsurance. For example, it authorizes federal high-risk pools. It prohibits insurers from excluding coverage for pre-existing conditions for children now and for adults in 2014, if it's still there. And it will offer cost-sharing subsidies for persons earning low and middle incomes, but underinsurance will remain a problem. I thank you very much for listening, this early in the morning especially. For more information about the project or reports, visit Kansas Health Institute's website or email me. Thank you very much.